Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive with us. Today, we're going to be looking at a Supreme Court case that might make you rethink some of those old nature versus nurture debates.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's Skinner v. Oklahoma.
Okay.
So we'll get this. It's 1942, World War II is raging.
Mm-hmm.
But in Oklahoma, there's a different kind of battle going on, right? And it's over the right to have children, to procreate.
Oh, wow.
We've got detailed briefs on the case and even some excerpts from the justices' opinions themselves. So we're really going deep on this one.
That's great. I think what's so fascinating about this case is how it brings these huge questions about individual liberties and the power of the state, all happening at the same time as science is, you know, changing and evolving.
Yeah.
Really makes you think.
It does. So the story starts with this guy, Jack Skinner.
Okay.
He'd been convicted of stealing chickens.
Stealing chickens.
Yeah. And later twice for armed robbery.
Oh, wow.
And because of all this, Oklahoma was about ready to sterilize him. Yeah. They had this law, the Habitual Criminal Sterilization Act.
Okay.
It was meant to stop criminals from passing on their, well, their criminal behavior to their kids.
Hmm. And that's where things get really interesting. Because that law was all based on the idea that you inherit criminal tendencies.
Really?
Yeah. Which, looking back now, is, well, it's a very shaky idea.
Yeah.
It shows how dangerous it can be to make laws based on iffy science, especially laws that have such a big impact on people's lives.
Wow. So they actually believed that someone's genes could make them more likely to commit a crime.
Yeah, that was kind of the thinking back then. It was fueled by the eugenics movement. And, of course, the science behind it was flawed. And a lot of times it was just plain prejudice disguised as science.
Wow.
But it really did shape the way laws were made.
So this law was specifically for habitual criminals. What exactly did that mean in Oklahoma back then?
Well, under this act, a habitual criminal was anyone who had been convicted at least twice for felonies. Felonies involving something called moral turpitude, and then convicted again of another felony after that.
Moral turpitude.
Yeah.
That sounds kind of vague. And the case mentions this difference between stealing chickens and then, like, embezzling money.
Right.
Were those seen as the same under this law?
That's a key point. The law actually said embezzlement wasn't one of the crimes that could get you sterilized. And that difference, that's actually a big part of Skinner's argument against the law.
Wait, so if someone steals chickens, they could be sterilized. But someone who embezzles millions, a white-collar criminal, they could have kids, no problem.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound very equal.
Exactly. And Skinner's lawyers argued that this went against the 14th Amendment, the Equal Protection Clause.
Okay.
They said the state was basically choosing between different crimes without any real scientific reason.
I mean, I know states have the power to make laws and define crimes, but where do you draw the line? Couldn't they argue they were trying to protect society from the crimes they thought were the worst?
Well, yeah, and that's a question that gets to the heart of it all, right? The balance between state power and individual rights.
Right.
The Supreme Court, they acknowledge that states do have some leeway. They can classify crimes.
Mm-hmm.
But they were very clear that these classifications can't just be random or discriminatory.
So what happened? Did the court uphold Oklahoma's law?
They did not. The court actually struck down the Habitual Criminal Sterilization Act unanimously. They said it was unconstitutional.
Wow.
Yeah. They argued that it violated the 14th Amendment by discriminating between different types of crimes without any real justification, especially since there wasn't any real scientific proof to back up the idea of inherited criminal tendencies.
Okay. But this probably wasn't a simple open and shut case, was it? The brief mentions some of the justices had even stronger opinions about it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's interesting because while all the justices agreed on the outcome, you know, to strike down the law, they didn't all agree on exactly why.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them wrote what are called concurring opinions, where they went even deeper into the problems of the Oklahoma law and the dangers it could lead to.
Okay, so let's talk about these concurring opinions then. Why did some justices feel they needed to say more? Like, what other issues did they see?
Well, one of the concurring opinions really focused on due process.
Okay.
This justice argued that even if you said the way they classified the crimes was okay, Skinner should still have had a chance to prove that he wasn't the kind of criminal the law was going after.
So a chance to prove that he wasn't actually likely to pass on these so-called criminal traits.
Right.
It seems like, I don't know, basic fairness that everyone should get a fair hearing.
Mm.
But especially when you're talking about something as big as having kids, it's not like anyone was saying he should just go free. But maybe there should have been some way to look at him as an individual instead of just lumping him in with everyone else.
Yeah, exactly. This justice was basically saying, even if we agree with the state's idea here, and that's debatable, you still can't just deny someone the chance to challenge it based on their own individual situation.
Okay. What about the other concurring opinion? What were they worried about?
That one got into some even more disturbing territory. This justice was really concerned about the possibility of this law being used for eugenics, basically targeting certain groups of people for sterilization based on flawed science and prejudice.
That's pretty heavy. It's a reminder of how even a law that seems neutral at first can be twisted and used to discriminate. Looking back at the history of eugenics, it's clear that this justice had a point.
Absolutely. And this brings us to one of the biggest takeaways from Skinner v. Oklahoma, which is that it's a really strong argument for judicial review, the courts acting as a check on the government.
So you're saying that the courts need to step in and protect individual rights, even when those rights are threatened by laws that were passed by, people we elected.
Yeah, exactly. In this case, the Supreme Court was like a safeguard against the state having too much power. They made sure that even in a crisis, remember, this was during World War II, the government can't just ignore basic freedoms without a really good reason.
So even though Skinner v. Oklahoma was specifically about sterilization, it has a much bigger meaning.
Oh, for sure. It's about equal protection, due process, and the right to have children. Those are like the foundation of a free and just society. And the fact that the court stood up for those principles, even when it meant striking down a law that was trying to deal with a problem, it's a powerful reminder of the role of the judiciary.
It also makes you wonder, about the danger of letting bad science or prejudice shape our laws. It makes you think about what kind of laws people might try to pass today based on, I don't know, flimsy science or prejudice.
That's a great point. Skinner v. Oklahoma reminds us that we always have to be paying attention and protecting our rights, especially when there are laws that promise easy answers to complicated problems. Those are usually the laws that end up doing more harm than good.
Okay, so we've covered the background, the arguments, the court's decision, and those concurring opinions. What about the main opinion itself? What were the key points there, and how did they phrase it?
Well, in the majority opinion, they really stress that having children is a fundamental right. Justice Douglas, who wrote it, used some really strong language saying that marriage and procreation are fundamental to the very existence and survival of the race.
Wow, he wasn't messing around.
Nope. And then he goes on to talk about how sterilization has these subtle, far-reaching, and devastating effects, and that any law allowing for it has to be looked at with something called strict scrutiny.
Okay, I've heard that term before, strict scrutiny. But I'm not really sure what it means in a legal context. Can you explain that?
Sure. Basically, it means that if the government wants to pass a law that limits a fundamental right, they have to have a really, really good reason. It's not enough to just say, we think this is a good idea. They have to prove that the law is absolutely necessary, that there is a strong state interest, and that it's written in a way that's very specific and targeted to achieve that interest. It can't be discriminatory.
So in this case, Oklahoma couldn't just say, some people who commit these crimes might have a tendency to commit crimes, so we'll sterilize everyone who fits this description.
Exactly. They had to meet a much higher standard, and they didn't.
Now, it's interesting that even though all the justices agreed to get rid of the law, they didn't all agree on the specific reasons why. We talked about the concurring opinions, but were there any other big differences in how they approached the case?
Yeah, the majority really zeroed in on the Equal Protection Clause. They argued that the law discriminated unfairly between different types of criminals. The concurring opinions agreed with that, but they also brought up other concerns about due process, the potential for eugenics, and what it all meant for individual liberty.
So each justice was coming at it from a different angle, but they all came to the same conclusion in the end. It seems like they were really trying to make sure this kind of thing wouldn't happen again.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that makes studying these cases so interesting, you know? You get to see all these different legal minds wrestling with these complicated issues, and even when they agree on the outcome, they often get there in very different ways.
So we've talked about the legal arguments, but I'm curious about the actual words the justices used. Were there any quotes or phrases that really stood out to you?
It's always so interesting to me to see how they put these ideas into words. You know, like it's one thing to talk about the concepts, but seeing it written out by the justices themselves, it just hits different.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Language they use, how they make their arguments, it really gives you a glimpse into how they were thinking and the world they were living in, too.
So let's get into the opinions themselves. But what were some of the quotes or arguments that really stuck with you? Well, in the majority opinion, Justice Douglas, he had this really powerful line. We are dealing here with legislation which involves one of the basic civil rights of man. Marriage and procreation are fundamental to the very existence and survival of the race.
Wow. He really got straight to the point. It's like he's saying, this isn't some small legal detail. This is about something huge, something at the core of being human.
Exactly. And later on in the opinion, he uses even stronger language, talking about how sterilization could be used for really bad things. He wrote, in evil or reckless hands, it can cause races or types which are inimical to the dominant group to wither and disappear.
That's pretty scary when you think about it. It reminds you of how dangerous eugenics can be. And how easy it is to use those kinds of policies to target and hurt certain groups. It's like he was looking ahead and seeing how it could all go wrong.
And that brings us back to one of the big legal principles in this case, right? The idea that if a law is going to limit a fundamental right, it has to be looked at with strict scrutiny.
Right.
So they can't just rely on generalizations or theories that haven't been proven. They need solid evidence that the law is really necessary and that it's carefully written to achieve a goal that the government is allowed to have.
So in Oklahoma's case, they couldn't just lean on shaky science and this vague idea of moral turpitude to justify taking away people's ability to have kids.
Nope. They had a much tougher standard to meet and they just didn't.
Okay, so let's look at the concurring opinions.
Yeah.
What were some of the key points there? You mentioned one justice really focused on due process.
Yeah, Chief Justice Stone. He argued that even if the law itself wasn't discriminatory on its face, the way they used it against Skinner was a violation of his due process rights.
Mm-hmm.
He said Skinner should have had a chance to fight back. To argue against the state, saying that he specifically was a risk for passing on so-called criminal tendencies.
So it's not enough to just say, well, some people who commit these crimes might have a genetic predisposition, so we're going to sterilize anyone who fits this broad category. It's like everyone deserves a chance to say, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't apply to me.
Exactly. Stone makes it really clear. A law which condemns, without hearing, all the individuals of a class to so harsh a measure as the prison, because some or even many merit condemnation, is lacking in the first principles of due process.
He's basically saying you can't just punish a whole group of people without giving each person a chance to prove that they don't deserve to be punished. That's kind of a basic idea of a fair system, isn't it?
Absolutely. And then you have Justice Jackson. His concurrence brings up even bigger questions about the state's power to do what he called biological experiments on people.
Biological experiments. That's a strong phrase. What was he talking about there?
Well, he was worried about the state using people like Skinner as, you know, test subjects, trying to wipe out traits they didn't like. And he was questioning whether that was ever okay, even with people who had committed crimes.
It's like he's saying there are some things the government should never be allowed to do no matter what. Even if they think they have a good reason, there have to be limits on what they can do to individuals.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And it takes us back to the bigger picture of Skinner v. Oklahoma. It's not just about sterilization. It's about putting limits on the power of the state and upholding everyone's basic rights.
And about the danger of letting bad science or prejudice shape our laws.
Exactly.
Well, this has been a really interesting deep dive. We've learned about the historical context, the arguments, and how this case still has an impact today. It's pretty amazing how a case from so long ago can still be so relevant to us now.
It really shows you how these questions about individual rights, the limits of state power, and how science affects our laws are timeless.
Well said. And everyone listening, we'll leave you with a question to think about. What if today we had much more solid scientific proof about inherited traits? Would a law like Oklahoma's be okay then? What kinds of limits should we put on how science is used to make laws? Keep learning, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep with us.